Okay, this hour, your part of the program will take your phone calls with Robert Young Pelton right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Robert Young Pelton with us. And Robert, before we get to the calls and they're lining up for you, China, they had some problems with their economy. What's going on there?
Well, China is a fairly new capitalist economy, so they had a lot of restrictions and controls over finance, and then they went crazy, and they built everything, and they popped, just like we did in the 80s. So I think that's just a healthy development. The only dangerous thing is everything we buy and use seems to come from China these days, and they rely on that. So long-term, I think it'll settle out. It was a natural correction, but they'll have the same problems that we've always had.
Yeah, no question about that. Now, but if they go down, what happens to us?
Well, they're not going to go down. They're not going to go down. They're just going to have a correction, a severe correction, in which they have to pull back, and they won't make so many empty cities, and you know, people won't spend their money so much, and they'll start to save. So they were on a high, and they were accelerating rapidly, and they just went off the edge and exploded. But they're not going down, just like America didn't vanish in the 80s and the 90s.
All right, to the phones now we go. Let's go to Pete in Miami. Hey, Pete, welcome to the program.
Yes, good evening, George, and good evening, Mr. Van Pelt.
Pelton.
Is that correct?
Robert Pelton.
Oh, Robert Pelton. Okay. I had no idea that when you took away the taxes and the drug enforcement agencies on the narcotics, the drugs would not be so loved and needed.
What's your question, though?
No, I don't have a question. I had a statement.
Just
to
a statement. Well, yeah, I would agree with that. The drug situation's out of control. I think, like we said, Robert, legalize it.
Well, here's the funny thing is drug dealers and drug smugglers have always tried to push harder and harder drugs into the system. You know, we have sort of a homegrown marijuana user, but we have a homegrown marijuana business. You know, Colorado just generated $53 million in tax revenue selling weed. But these
Robert, can you hear us? We're starting to lose you a little bit.
I can hear you fine.
Okay. You're breaking up a little bit.
Shut down these transportation networks. Yeah. Put harder drugs in. So at the same time, we are losing the drug war. Most of our prisons are full of people on minor, major drug busts. So it's one of these unsustainable ideas that we can simply throw everybody in jail that use drugs.
All right. Next up, we go to Kevin in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thank you. A couple things. First of all, my one really strong recollection from basic training in the military was the very definite sense that almost anybody could really be brainwashed in a matter of a week or two, if not even a couple days, if someone has complete control over their sensory input, all of their sights and sounds and smells and when they get up and when they go to bed and all the rest. I think brainwashing is amazingly easy. That was just my impression of it going through basic training in the middle of a big city in the United States. So I can only imagine what it's like other places. But my question was regarding this whole Iran nuclear deal. I was very interested to hear your comments earlier. And we've had this nonstop stream of statements coming out of Iran that are very belligerent and very aggressive towards both Israel and the United States. And it just seems ridiculous to me because it's 100% counterproductive to Iran to kill this deal before it's even happened. I mean, they stand to get $150 billion released of their own money if the thing goes through. And based on their comments, it sounds like they're doing everything they can to kill it. And that makes me think that these comments and these media stories are absolutely cooked by somebody other than Iran. And I'm wondering if there's, if you guys have any further insight into that, because I just think it stinks. I can't believe that these are accurate stories. They're just too counterproductive.
Well, you know, a lot of people have said that, Kevin. And Robert, I want to get your take on this. I mean, it is obviously suicidal to say these things, yet time and time again, people say, no, they are really saying it. What's your take?
Well, it's actually kind of simple. I mean, Iran does not have a nuclear weapon, and Israel views Iran as a definite threat. And, of course, Hezbollah is a threat to Israel, and, of course, we have the same problem in Iraq and other areas. But Iran is not necessarily a threat to us, the U.S., and so what President Obama is doing, don't necessarily agree with what he does overall, but he's basically trying to put these old, multi-decade feuds to bed so we can move on. And one of the things he deliberately did was override a lot of outrage and say, look, let's just move on. Let's go into the next phase, which is how do we pacify our relationship with Iran and the U.S. and ignore some of the special interest people? Because you remember the deal with Cuba was also blocked by special interest.
Sure.
You know,
no question about that. Well, you know, I watch these clips of the Ayatollah, and he's got all these people cheering, and you hear, I don't speak Farsi, so you see these little subtitles under him that says, death to America, death to Israel. I'm assuming that's what he's saying based on what the news outlet is giving me. But what if they're not? What if they're just making that stuff up? Would they do that?
No, they're not making it up. But these are politicians. These are people who have a vested interest in getting people angry to cover their own failings. Things are not going that well in Iran. And listen to Donald Trump talk about Mexicans. You would think that Mexicans are the most evil people on earth, you know, and you could use a sound clip from that in Iran. So you're going to have extremists. You're going to have people saying things that are good for sound bites. But at the end of the day, Iran is a functioning sort of lower level economy that needs to integrate into the world.
They're not going to with those people running the show.
Well, our belief, and it's been proven over and over again, is that the masses of people will not tolerate this. At some point, they will rise up like they have in other countries and
yes.
get rid of these people and send them back to where they came from, which was in exile in Europe.
Susan's in Phoenix. Go ahead, Susan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much. Mr. Pelton, I was wondering, because since you're an expertise in world affairs, if we had never invaded into the Middle East, would they still have the mindset to want to kill us? Would that have not changed, or is that just their total mindset? And I've always wanted somebody to tell me the truth on that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, and you're going to get the truth from Robert Young Pelton. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, first of all, we didn't technically invade Afghanistan, which is in South Asia. We supported the overthrow of the Taliban, and then it turned into a big mess. We stayed there far too long. We actually won. We had the Taliban at a surrender ceremony, which was within weeks of us landing there with special forces troops and CIA. In Iraq, we had this horrible neocon vision of the world in which we were going to just basically knock over all these strongmen like dominoes and eventually go into Iran. And we thought they would all be cheering and clapping like they were in Afghanistan in the early weeks. And we were absolutely totally wrong. We completely mismanaged that. Now, Iraq had no strategic interest to us. George Bush's father did exactly the right thing by going in, punishing Saddam, and not going all the way to Baghdad. And he should have been contained like that, which he was for almost 10 years. But we constantly mismanage the hearts and minds or reconstruction of countries. We're really good at winning wars. And what we should do is use that properly. We should mount punitive expeditions, remove people or groups that anger us or threaten us, and then pull back.
The problem is, as you look at Vietnam and every other place, once we go in, we just can't seem to make it work, as you've said.
Well, we have done things that haven't been on the radar. Don't forget, we've been involved in many, many wars, from Angola to Nicaragua, and we do actually pretty well at small, micromanaged counterinsurgencies. When we bureaucratize warfare, when we make it a multi-billion-dollar business and keep jet fighters and, you know, billion-dollar budgets going, is where we fall down. And this is what happened in Iraq. It became a huge boondoggle for American contractors.
Well, absolutely. And look at our involvement in the former Yugoslavia out there.
We still have people over there.
You're probably looking at them across the border right now where you are, aren't you?
Yeah, and like I said, it is a big money. War is actually one of the few things that keeps purely American industries going. Our aerospace, you know, our contractors, people from Middle America and maybe poorer cities are making good money overseas, changing oil and generators. You know, it's good for America's economy, but unfortunately it breeds these never-ending wars.
Why do we seem to be the ones to initiate this? And I'm not talking about defense of 9/11, but, I mean, you don't see, I mean, are the French going in first in any place?
Yeah, they go into Africa, they go in quickly, they shoot a bunch of people and they go home. I mean,
you don't hear much about that. We don't.
Well, because it happened so quickly, but the French went into Mali, they've been in the Central African Republic, they have the French Foreign Legion. It's not unusual for the French to go in and pop some rebel group and then leave. We also use South African groups, like, remember the old Executive Outcomes? You saw what happened against Boko Haram. They went in and pushed them out before the elections. So there's a lot of little wars going on that never make the headlines. What I'm talking about and what your reader was concerned about is that, you know, when we kick these hornet's nests, are they going to come and sting us over here? And the answer is yes.
Eventually they will, and in some cases they have. Let's go to Montreal. Mark's with us east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, before I start, I wish you'd come to Montreal and do a seminar.
Oh, that would be fun.
Mr. Norrie, certain mosques in Montreal, are being raided by the police. And I wonder why.
No idea?
No idea. I don't know if they're preaching fanaticism or what, but they do go in. They don't go into all of them, but certain ones they do.
Interesting.
And, all right. You know, we also arrested a guy here, a 17-year-old youth who was fanaticalized, and he was in interrogation with the Montreal police and his father, and he called his father an infidel and the police an infidel. So, you know, I think it's a homegrown situation here. But
we'll check into that.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark, thank you. Have you heard anything about that, Robert? Anything with Montreal and Canadian forces? Haven't heard. Robert, you still with us?
I'm still with you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You're breaking up a little bit again. And let me tell everybody, of course, that you are in Italy a long way. So let me put you on hold here and see if this works. Is that a little better?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. That seems to pop you back in.
Yeah.
I still like the technology. It's still worth it.
It is. It just depends whether your hotel has good internet or not.
Yeah.
I have not been following events in Canada, but I know that there are very, very robust counterintelligence groups that go into mosques, listen, report back on any sort of alarmist or, you know, violent preaching, and they do crack down on them. And mosques, and I'm not saying all, but some mosques have been supportive of people going over to fight in places like Somalia, and they immediately rolled up or penetrated, which is even funnier because obviously the FBI, like the Ku Klux Klan, wants to infiltrate these groups desperately, but they don't have the manpower.
Some people have said that Tsarnaev, the younger one who was alive, the Boston bomber, his brother, of course, shot to death. He's dead. That they didn't have anything to do with it. I find that bizarre. You've heard these stories too. Why do people come up with things like that?
Because we can't explain odd things. When lightning hits somebody on the golf course, we think, oh, he must have been a sinner. I mean, we can't. Our brains have to find logic in things. You know, it's difficult to watch 9/11 and believe that happened. but it did. And so there's cause and effect, and there's also ancillary events. So terrorism is specifically designed to be surprising, to be shocking, to make you feel unsettled because you can't explain it.
Do you think with 9/11 that some of our officials knew it was going to happen and did nothing because of what we've seen happen now, Patriot Act and everything else?
No, I knew a number of people that knew that things were going to happen. They didn't know the date. It was supposed to be in July. But there were a lot of unusual people in the States who were doing strange things, and yes, they were all reported to law enforcement. But because at that time we thought that Oklahoma was a terrorist attack, and that would be a white guy who was in the military, who was, you know, part of a militia,
mm-hmm,
law enforcement refused to believe that this would come from that quarter, so they ignored all the warnings. But we actually have a pretty good law enforcement and intelligence system inside America.
Yeah, I'm sure there were some people in government, FBI folks, who knew and couldn't get the ear of their superiors. I mean, we've got a great intelligence force. They're not stupid people. And I got to believe some guy looked at a couple reports and strung them together and said, man, you've got a lot of Middle Eastern people trying to learn how to fly jumbo jets and big planes, and they don't care about landing? There's something strange here.
Well, these were reported. And in Arizona, there was a guy named Hani Hanjer who was reported by the local mosque as a guy who's hanging out with a bunch of Saudis, has a bunch of money, doesn't make sense, why is he here? And once again, what are they supposed to do about that? Because they didn't view that as a threat.
After taking a tour of the 32,000 square feet of this...
I think we may have finally lost you.
No, I'm here still. I'm here.
Okay.
Things happening.
Popping it in and out on this.
But I just encourage people. Pilot after 9/11 said over the intercom on a flight, he said, look to the guy on your left or the gal on your left, introduce yourself, shake your hand, and the first guy that doesn't shake your hand or looks really nervous, ask him again what he's doing. And you know, it's up to us to form the networks and the intelligence to understand who's a threat and who's a friend.
Yeah, that's true too. We're going to take... So give us a couple of your websites, Mr. Pelton, before the break.
Well, if you go to dpxgear.com, or if you go to MOAS, MOAS.EU, or go to comebackalive.com, you'll enjoy yourself at all those sites.
Okay, stick with us. Those of you on hold, we're going to get right back to you on Coast to Coast AM with Robert Young Pelton. I apologize for a little of the breakup, but he's on Skype. He's in Italy. He is way, way out there, and he's going to be witnessing a test of some drones. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back as well. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We've also got Instagram up and running now. Hey, we're part of this new technology, too. And you can always email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Coasttocoastam.com. Well, next hour, we're going to dabble with the supernatural here on Coast to Coast AM. In a moment, though, we'll come back with Robert Young Pelton and your phone calls. Okay, welcome back to our final segment with Mr. Robert Young Pelton and your phone calls. And let's go right to the calls. We'll go to the Bronx. Joe is with us. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Hey, by the way, I got your CD. When right. Tom gets back, we'll get working on that for you.
Great. Thank you very much. I wanted to ask Mr. Pelton, now you mentioned about the wall, which would seal off our border and keep people out. But, you know, as in Berlin, walls have also been used to keep people in. And I just wanted to get your view on that.
Well, I don't think that the walls keep people in or out, but that people want to build walls thinking that it keeps people in or out. But you make a very good point that walls and borders are designed to keep people in the case of North Korea, which we talked about earlier. But actually what walls do is they breed corruption with the people that run the gates. And there used to be a system in San Diego where you could be smuggled across the San Diego-San Ysidro border for $5,000 in an SUV, and a guy would jump in the front seat from Mexico and say, take that gate right there, and that guy would wave you through. So putting up bigger walls just means that you make more money bribing people to get through.
Is it corruption, Robert's all over the place. I mean, arms dealers were corrupt. I mean, they were all corrupt, weren't they?
Well, when you tip a waitress, you could argue that that's messing with the system. But patronage is a very popular system outside of America. You know, we seem to think we're better than other people. But, you know, politicians pay to get elected. I mean, the corruption is everywhere.
I mean, if you did business in the Middle East, you had to grease the skids in order to get in. That's just the way it's done there.
Yeah, they use middlemen who arrange deals and keep everybody out of jail and pocket a large chunk of the money.
We go to Charlottesville, Virginia. John's with us, first-time caller. Hello, John.
Oh, hello. I have a question for your guest about Kurdistan, the largest group of people in the world without a country. And in the news, when we're always talking about the Middle East, are we going to have a two-state solution in Israel? Are we going to have a new country of Palestine? And Palestinians amount to maybe 6 to 9 million, whereas Kurds are 40 million. And just, I don't know why there's not enough awareness in the media, or like why is that not something pushed in the international community to have, like, they don't have a Kurdish state seat in the UN. They don't have things like this. Why has that been marginalized in the media in favor of a conflict that's less relevant as far as human lives?
Well, that's a very, very good comment, because after World War One and World War Two, what we saw was the dissolution of city-states and little duchies and whatever led to anarchy. So when the UN came into fruition as the League of Nations, one of the things they absolutely refused to do was to think about the redivision of colonial boundaries and also old medieval views of the world. Places like Somalia, for example, are made out of three countries. You know, you could argue that there are dozens of countries that don't exist officially. If you create Kurdistan, you take a chunk out of Turkey, you take a chunk out of Syria, and you take a chunk out of Iran, which then plunges three nations into either warfare or chaos. So you're seeing a huge pushback against the redrawing of sometimes ridiculous borders. You know, they carved up Africa in Germany in 1895 in a room and decided that, okay, these will be the borders. You take this, you take that. They haven't changed.
All right. We've got Jeff in Culver City, California. Jeffrey, you're up.
Hi, George. Thanks again. And Mr. Van Pelton, nice to talk to you, sir. You're one of my favorite guests. Yes, I find that the Ayatollah statement of Israel lasting another 25 years very strange and too coincidental. You know, shortly after I said that Nostradamus predicted that, you know, the state would last about 70 years from his predictions and my own estimations from now at 50 years. But it just goes to show that God had absolutely nothing to do with that horrendous arrangement set up after World War II with Great Britain, you know, irresponsibly running, you know, Palestine, Israel becoming a state in 1947, you know, the CIA, Roswell, New Mexico, UFOs, aliens, and all that. But, Mr. Pelton, you know, I'd just like to ask you this. Do you believe that if Israel is eventually attacked and eliminated as a state by Iran, do you believe that the survivors will try to reestablish a new Israel here in the United States with what they already got here and created and established? And do you think that any survivors of both Israel and Iran after a nuclear catastrophe will try to relocate somewhere else, like Australia or New Zealand? And I'll take your answer off there.
That's an interesting twist, Robert.
Yeah, now that's always been the scenario. First of all, you know, should Israel exist? Well, it does, so get over it. And then secondly, if somebody attacked them with nuclear weapons, and once again, you know, Iran, Iraq do not have nuclear weapons, but they use scuds, there was fear of chemicals, would Israel say, no, we're going to take Uganda or New York or Florida as our new home? No, I think they have cemented their identity in the Holy Land, and they will go back again and again and again, and they'll fix it up and do whatever they have to do. The real problem is the neighbors there still look at traditional history going back, you know, thousands of years, and they don't feel that Israel deserves to exist in that region, but most of the new governments are getting used to it. So evolutionary, I think Israel will always exist. What its borders are, whether there's a Palestine left or whether they're at war with their neighbors, is really up to them.
We've got Don in Two Rivers, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show, Don. You are on the air with us. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you. I'm a first-time caller, and thank you for taking my call.
Glad you got in.
My question is, the U.S., the world markets are dropping, and China's got everything to do with it. What is going on in China that all of our market, the whole world is dropping in their markets?
Well, I'm out of my league now because I'm not a financial expert, but I'll just say that China is a powerhouse economy that overexpanded. They heated up. They created a lot of fake value.
They overbuilt stuff, Robert?
Yeah, they took all this money they were making and put it into things that didn't make money. And of course, they had leverage and debt and things like that. And we had the same experience here. And the bottom line is that it is a natural correction, except it's a big correction. And I think, you know, the economy relies on growth and technology and innovation, and all the signs are healthy for future, you know, growth internationally. And China, it just has to go through the same growing pains that we went through and Europe went through.
I mean, didn't they build a city, a brand new, spanking new city, and nobody lives there?
Multiple cities. They're all
building skyscrapers, townhouses. Nobody lives. Nobody's there.
Well, go to Vancouver. You'll see condos that are purchased by Chinese to launder or anchor their money that nobody lives in either. I mean, it was a huge explosion of wealth that had to multiply, but there wasn't that growth on top of that. You remember people flipping houses in the 80s and then the early 90s, and suddenly there wasn't a bigger fool to pay them more money, and everything crashed.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely. Talking about explosions, what's going on in China where they have these explosions at these chemical plants? Something's weird there.
Well, China's a disaster. I mean, the way they handle materials, the pollution, there's no controls.
Yeah, no quality control there at all, is there?
So it was a long time coming, and there'll be plenty more.
Steve's in Portsmouth, New Hampshire now, east of the Rockies. Hey, Stephen, go ahead, sir.
Yes, George, thanks for having me on, and hello to your guests. Yeah, I just want to make one comment about your outlook or your theory, I guess, for lack of a better word, on economics. Mr. Pelton, what's your first name?
Robert.
Yeah, it's Robert. I think if you look at history, you'll find that the problems that we have today are a result of this open borders global economics that we've been having for centuries. So to say that more open borders and this global economic way of thinking, way of doing things, is somehow going to bring happiness and prosperity and peace to the world is wrong. I mean, all history and all current empirical evidence shows that that's what's creating this inequality of wealth and the special interest wanting to control the flow of goods and services and the flow of money. So just thinking this free, open global economics is going to solve our problems is wrong, I think. I think we have to start looking at nation-centric economic systems. Each nation starts to develop ways to provide economic opportunity for their own people, have some international trade, but have it done in a way that benefits the individual nations, not the masters of global production. So
I disagree, and I'll tell you why, because growth relies on finding things that are worth less, bringing them to a place that's worth more, or finding skills that cost less and putting them in a job where you can make more profit. So the globalization of both resources, labor, intellectual property, and technology has actually spurred greater growth. So as a company or as an inventor, and I run a company and I have patents and I invent things, I want to sell them to a global market. I want to make them where things are cheaper and at better quality, and I want to sell them at the highest price I can get. I can't do that within a closed system.
How did Gaddafi, Robert, who's now dead, how did he lose control during that Arab Spring? I mean, what happened where everything just fell apart on him?
Well, you know, Gaddafi was a strong man that subsidized everybody's food and gas. And I think I talked about this earlier. But he also repressed large sections of the population. And when he started to falter, when he started to, I guess, weaken his grip over some of the ethnic groups and tribes, because it's basically a collection of tribes, mm-hmm. they took advantage of that weakness and they went for it. And right now, you know, I go to Libya and it's a wonderful place, but it's controlled by militias or tribes who are very, very strong. And they're in set piece positions because they know exactly how many men they have, how many weapons they have, and it restructured the country rapidly. So Gaddafi was a strong man who kept everybody together, kept the small tribes down, and those small tribes banded together and kicked them out. Plus, it didn't help that NATO bombed the hell out of them. Of course, America was involved in that,
right?
And destabilized them and eventually killed them.
Who's living in his palace?
It's all blown up. So I don't
oh, really? It's gone?
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny. The mayor of Tripoli is a friend of mine, and I go to Tripoli, which is a very thriving modern city with tons of construction projects that are all frozen. I think most people would be quite shocked. I mean, I'm not talking about Benghazi, where they're bombing, or Dara,
yeah.
or Sirte, where ISIS is, or what they call ISIS. But Tripoli, I mean, Libya is a huge place with a lot of oil resources and a lot of money there, and at some point we'll get past it and we'll start working with Libya, because even though we sort of blame them for being fundamentalists, they're very, like Syrians, they're very educated, affluent people who want to get on with their lives.
It just seemed like those countries were, they had order to them when Gaddafi was there or when Saddam Hussein was in Iraq.
Yeah, well, this goes back to borders. I mean, you know, they didn't create their countries. The British created, you know, Iraq and joined together the Shia and the Sunni and ruled those countries with a divisive manner. And what happened is that in order to rule those borders, you have to deal with those conflicts. So one group's going to lose. You know, democracy does not work in these polarized nations like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Iran. As soon as you take the pressure off and you say, okay, everybody, let's sing kumbaya and let's all hug our neighbor, it takes about, I don't know, 4 to 8 weeks before they start shooting each other and complaining about something that happened 300 years ago. And these are just pressure cookers waiting to explode.
And they do. Let's go to Dan in Buffalo, New York. Daniel, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Dan.
Listening on, while I'm on hold, I came up with a lot of things I'd like to ask about, but I'll stick to my original point. The need, as Mr. Pelton put it, for globalization, I consider globalization something we're sliding into. I see the rights and freedoms that we have as being tied to laws which were cooked up by nation states. And out of control, illegal immigration and the first world countries can be and probably is a weapon being used against them. Some of their own politicians being in on it for whatever reasons. And that's my point. I'm just kind of concerned about freedom. I mean, freedom and democracy, all those quaint notions. Because, you know, if you want to count on the UN, good luck. I mean, they have a rights charter, but they put the worst violators on the rights commission, and you know, in the European Parliament is so busy cooking up writing new powers for itself. I don't think they care about individual rights. Rights of the individual are going to become pretty passe sometime soon, and whoever has the upper hand is going to.
They're going to use it. All right, go ahead, Robert. Little reaction. He who has the gold rules, right?
Yeah, he makes a good point here. There's two things that are going on besides globalization. There's also the destruction of boundaries, but also the 1%, the idea that people are using, manipulating this globalization to become very, very wealthy and creating a huge gap between the wealthiest people and the poorest people. So I'm not saying that all these things are all good. I'm just saying that globalization allows somebody to go to the furthest reaches of the planet, find something cheap, sell it to the marketplace and make a lot of money. But the 1%ization of the planet is a direct result of globalization. So that's an evil. That's not a good thing.
Zachary in Ithaca, New York. Let's squeeze you in, Zachary. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, folks.
Morning.
And I'm a first-time caller, and I've been a long-time listener.
Thank you.
Two questions and comments.
Let's go with the one question, one comment before the clock gets us. Go ahead.
ISIS, what are we going to do because they said they'll plant their flag on the Capitol in Washington, D.C.? And two, the Ayatollah Khamenei said he will not abide by any treaty, and he's going to put a nuclear bomb on Tel Aviv as soon as he can do it, so it's a race to the bomb. So what do we do?
Well, two questions, two answers. One,
minute to go, Robert. Go ahead.
I know. Iran does not have a nuclear bomb, but Pakistan does have drones, so think about that. Secondly, ISIS needs to be eliminated. In other words, ISIS is operating in vacuum areas, so they're allowed to do whatever they want because there's no one there to shoot them. Our attempts have been very weak, but I think we'll probably strengthen our ability to reach out and kill ISIS over the next 2-3 years.
Robert, my friend, be safe out there in Italy, and we'll talk to you when you get back here, okay?
Thanks, George. It's always a pleasure.
Robert Young Pelton. Love that guy. He's an adventurist, and he's out there all the time. Up next, Jonathan Zapp joins me as we're going to talk about telepathy, UFOs, near-death experiences, singularity, and yes, human consciousness. All of that next on Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan Zapp, he was on with me before, and I'm looking forward to it again.